Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, what it takes to take on payday lenders. U.S. Bank has found a way. They announced this week that they will lend small amounts of money, up to $1,000, to people who encounter an unexpected expense. Now, to be sure, U.S. Bank is charging plenty of interest, but their rates are lower than the often usurious rates that payday lenders charge. So this is one small solution. What would it take to truly reform the payday lending business? The state of Ohio has found a way, and we'll talk about that. And why isn't payday reform more common? Two guests, your experience in the conversation. Have you ever had to turn to a payday lender to make ends meet or cover an unexpected expense? What could banks or credit unions do to make emergency loans more accessible? So if you've been in the situation where you needed a short-term loan and you turned to a payday lender, talk to us about what happened with that. Did it meet a need that you had at the moment? Were you finding yourself having to refinance the amount that you borrowed? And what do you think banks or credit unions could do to make emergency loans more accessible? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, anywhere in the region and on Twitter. It's at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. Our guest this hour, Malia Connolly, is with us. She's director of the Association of Black Economic Power, and they're working to create a federally chartered credit union that opens later this year. Malia, welcome. Good to have you in the studio.
Thank you for having me.
Gary Rivlin is with us. He's a journalist and author of Broke USA, From Pawn Shops to Poverty, and he's with us today from New York. And Gary, welcome to you. Good to have you in the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So, Malia, I thought about what payday lenders do, I thought, are they a necessary evil? Necessary because they do fill a gap in the market, and evil because they charge these ridiculous interest rates that often just suck people into owing and owing and owing. But are they necessary?
I think that's a question for consumers and voters. We have opportunities, like a lot of states have, to change our laws and to eradicate payday lending. South Dakota definitely did. So it's up to us to decide whether or not they're necessary. As we stand today, for many vulnerable Minnesotans, they are a necessary evil because there's a gap in service and they have no other direction to go in.
I suggested that again because, and I'm not sure that people who have not used payday lenders understand this. Often you go in to borrow, and what happens is you're borrowing again and again, or you can't keep up with the interest rates. Will you just describe how this works?
So payday lending, the mechanism is really predatory in nature. First of all, they're marketed towards vulnerable folks who are looking for quick funds that they typically can't find somewhere else. These are typically unbanked or underbanked individuals. When you take out a payday loan, the balance is due the entire loan on your next paycheck. That's why they call them
payday loans.
2 weeks
later, potentially. 2 weeks later. Right.
And usually you need that loan in order to cover expenses. And you could assume that most folks are living paycheck to paycheck. So when that next payment comes, when your next payday comes and you realize you need your entire paycheck to take care of your bills, you have two options. You can default on that loan. You can take the rent that you know you're supposed to pay and pay the payday lender. Or you can take out another loan to cover that loan. And what folks usually do is option three. They take out another loan to cover that loan, and it becomes a cycle. It's called a payday lending trap. And that's the situation that most folks who rely on predatory lending end up in.
Yeah, Gary, just to emphasize this, you owe the amount of the loan and all 200, 300% of the interest the next day you get paid, right?
Well, 200-300% interest is over the course of a year. So let's use a specific example. You want to borrow $100. I don't know the exact fees in Minnesota, but the typical rate is $15 for every $100. So when you borrow that $100, you're going to owe $115 in 2 weeks, as Malia points out, that the person who's so desperate for money right now that they're willing to sign up for this high fee, exorbitant fee loan, they're not really going to have extra money. This is not an installment loan. All $115 is due. And so typically they roll it over. One data point from a couple years back from Pew showed that the average payday loan customer has 12 of these, 13 of these a year. So we call these emergency loans. I just call it a really expensive way to balance your checkbook every month. They're not emergency loans. They're a way a lot of people who are making, trying to get by on $15,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year are balancing their books. So one thing that's really important to keep in mind about payday loans is it's really the working poor. You have to have some kind of regular check, a paycheck. Some payday lenders will take a Social Security check, but you have to have some kind of money coming in that they're loaning against, or they're fronting you the money until you get your next paycheck, your next Social Security check. So we're not talking about the very poorest. We're talking about that next tier above, the working poor making $15,000 to $30,000.
Where, by the way, one small expense or one significant expense kind of sends your whole budget into a tailspin. I mean, who was it? The Federal Reserve that said that many, many Americans could not cover a $400 unexpected expense.
That's, I think it was 47%.
Almost half the payday lenders are going after, right?
So your car, you know, your car breaks down. You need your car to get to and from work. You need your car to pick up your kids. You need your car. And so the desperate, so kind of turning back, circling back to your original question, it's a necessary evil. And that's why it's imperative that there are more affordable alternatives. U.S. Bank is getting us a little bit of the way there. Was it 70 to 90%, which is a lot better than 200 to 400%.
Annualized interest.
Right. And so, you know, there are credit unions, select banks out there providing a more affordable product, but they're few and far between. And, you know, most Americans, most of those who want to take out a payday loan do not have these better options.
Yeah. Let me take some calls here to Robert in Coleraine. Robert, it sounds like you know firsthand what this cycle is like. What happened with you?
Well, I just needed rent one time, I think. Another time it was maybe just Christmas came up, and I just ran short, and I took out a loan, and it does turn into just a payment that you have to make every 2 weeks. It's $40 every 2 weeks. It's like, I just got to pay this payment, and you take the loan back out, and you try to pay off $50 more 1 week, and then you find out next week, no, I need that money back, so you're back to the original full amount. So honestly, over the course of 4 years, maybe more, I think I had between $3,000 and $4,000 worth of just interest on a $500 to $800 worth of an original loan.
Oh my gosh.
And I know it's bad. Like,
Robert, I'm sympathizing with you, and I'm shocked that it adds up like that. Did you end up getting it paid off?
Well, every tax season, you know, we'd get a good chunk of money back, and we'd be able to pay it off. And
yeah,
we'd be off of it for 4 months, 3 months, and then all of a sudden, we're out of money again.
Right.
And, you know, we got bills to pay. We got an electric bill that suddenly, you know, we put off for a little while we're catching up on other bills. And I'm thankful now that I have a good job. I think I finally caught up to it, but I've had a good job for a number of years. I make more than an average person, and I still had trouble paying off those loans.
I really appreciate the call, Robert, and you sharing the experience. Does this sound pretty common to you, Malia?
It does. The beta loan that we're working on now with Village with the association.
Your credit union.
Yes,
yeah.
The emerging and proposed Black-led credit union based on the North Side. It's called the New Day Loan, and we have had folks come in to take the loan who I mean, these folks are working. We had one particular individual who worked for the county. She had a good income. She just wanted to get a laptop for her son. He was starting school. And when we asked her about her financial institution, she had been turned away from a local credit union that had a credit score requirement for membership. And 12 years ago, when she got her job at the county, she took a fast cash card from Walmart. And I mean, when we talk about predatory lending, it's not just the loans. There are a plethora of products that are predatory in nature. And she ended up using that as her financial institution for 12 years. That's a dollar every time she swiped that card.
So tell me what that is. How does that work?
So a fast cash card is a prepaid card that you can load. You can set it up with your direct deposit. Because she didn't have a bank account, she used that card, the checking and routing number for that card for her, basically her bank account. The problem is that card charged her every time she swiped it. So she paid over, on average, $24,000 over the last 12 years, which could be an equivalent of a significant down payment on a house, which was one of the goals that she had when she came in for the loan. And so when we talk about needing alternatives, and we talk about folks like Robert, who are good people working hard and just need equitable financial products and services, it's up to us to decide that that should be the standard and nothing lower.
Gary, why haven't banks and credit unions stepped more assertively into this market? Why don't they, for the most part, want anything to do with this?
It's kind of a hassle for a bank. You know, a $100 loan requires the same amount of paperwork as a $10,000 loan. I remember there's a famous, I heard this from a payday lender that, you know, famously a bank would rather have 100 customers with $1 million than 1 million customers with $100. Well, payday lenders are the opposite. You know, they're taking advantage of how hard this is. In fact, there's this Black-owned bank, one of the top five Black-owned banks in the country, called Liberty Bank in New Orleans. And the CEO there recognized there was a problem. Louisiana has even a higher rate, 400% or so, annual percentage rate than Minnesota. And he came up with a product, and he thought, you know, a fair rate, something in the vicinity of 15, 18, 20%. He experimented with different ones. He just couldn't make it work. I mean, first off, if you're creating it, then you have to market it. That costs money. You need to have people to take care of it. There are people that you have to who are not up to date, so you have to have the equivalent of a debt collector, someone following up on those loans. And he just discontinued it because he'd have to charge more than he wanted to charge because it's really difficult. On the other hand, in North Carolina, they have a statewide credit union. It's one of the largest credit unions in the country, and they just added on a product where they said, hey, you want to take a payday loan? We're going to charge only 12% APR. This is a really nifty feature built in that as you're paying yourself back, their version lets you do an installment, you know, $100 a month if you owe $500 kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And a little bit goes into a savings account. So by the time you've paid it off, you have a few hundred dollars in your own savings account. So next time you need to borrow $300, you borrow from yourself.
That's good.
But many of us are able to do, who are fortunate enough to do, if you have an emergency, you just dip into the little bit of savings you have. And he called that, this 12% product, you know, the single most profitable that his credit union offered. So, you know, I've seen mixed data. I know people who have tried and it wasn't worth it or they weren't able to make money. On the other hand, there's the North Carolina example and other examples from around the country that do work.
Joshua says Wells Fargo used to have direct deposit loans for customers with direct deposit at least 6 months and accounts in good standing. Basically the same as payday, but for a $10 fee. In a pinch, you could use that to get your paycheck up to a week earlier. But they stopped doing it. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, U.S. Bank discontinued their check advance loan back in 2014 after the comptroller of the currency issued a guidance against those type of payday traps. Because when you look at it, it seems like a reasonable loan, but you know, it's up to $500. $50 on $500 comes out to 260% APR. So When you have folks that are recycling these loans every time they get paid, they become predatory. And just to piggyback off of what Gary is saying, you know, I think we should also just look at the foundation of banks themselves. They are profit-driven institutions. They do not have the ability to hold, you know, this model of helping, you know, everyday people with small dollar loans. This is the reason why, you know, this simple loan is more of a, you know, going from worse to bad.
You mean what U.S. Bank is doing?
The U.S. Bank simple loan at 71%, right. You know, flies in the face of what the Attorney General says. The Attorney General of Minnesota says that borrowers should not take out loans over 33%. The Center for Responsible Lending just sent a letter out to multiple banks, including U.S. Bank, back in May, advising them not to do any loans over 36%. And so this loan being at 71% might be better than the 300%, but it's still predatory in nature. It's important for us to understand credit unions and community development financial institutions are actually built for people and not profit. So those are the places we should be investing resources in to support vulnerable citizens.
This is a conversation looking at the idea of predatory lending, particularly payday loan lenders, and the regulation around that, this new product that U.S. Bank announced earlier this week. As I said in the introduction, still very high interest rates, but not as exceptional and as predatory as many of the payday lenders wage against people that are borrowing. Asking you this morning if you've ever had to turn to a payday lender to make ends meet, cover an unexpected expense. And we are talking this morning with our guests about what banks or particularly credit unions or other associations could do to make emergency loans more accessible. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at CarrieMPR. To the phones to Sarah in Minneapolis. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Hi, what's your involvement with this?
Well, I am the director of Exodus Lending. We're a nonprofit that refinances payday loans for people who are caught in that trap.
Uh-huh. How does that work then?
Well, basically the way it works is people who have found themselves paying, you know, getting another one loan to pay off the previous one, as Malia described earlier, come to us and we take over that loan. So if they owe, let's say, $400 to Ace Cash, we will go to Ace Cash and pay that loan back for them. And then we have them pay us back once a month over the next 12 months to pay the exact amount that we paid off. So we take no additional interest or fees from them. We just pay what they owed at the time they walked in our door.
How do you make this business model work, by the way, Sarah?
We have wonderful donors and foundations and churches that have been supportive of us. And it's, for the most part, our biggest donors are people in the community who want to invest in their community and hate to see this money sucked out of their communities by going straight to a payday lender.
And do you have, I mean, this sounds like an answer for a lot of people who are in these dire straits. Do you have a limit on the number of people that you can help in a given, you know, year?
So far, no. We've had investments to us. We have people who are investing $10,000 over a three-year time, and they're not earning any interest from us, but they're investing in their community. And so we've been able to help pay for those loans with those investments. And after 3 years, we can either give that money back, or they can reinvest, or they can donate it to us if they'd like to further our work.
I'm so glad you heard the show and you called it. Anything you want to add to this?
Well, I think if people are caught in that trap, they should look for us, Exodus Lending.
Okay.
And we're exoduslending.org, and we're very helpful to, we're very much looking forward to helping folks out of that trap.
Somebody tweeted your website here, so I'll retweet that. Malia, it sounds like you're familiar with this.
I'm so glad Sarah called. We've been working in partnership with Exodus Lending, and this is one challenge that Sarah and I have discussed, is that when you have folks and her clients who come in and they're able to get out of one payday loan trap, as Robert mentioned, 4 or 5 months later, they're faced with the same situation. And if they don't have an alternative like the New Day loan, they end up back in that same trap. So what we're trying to eliminate is that recidivism and making sure that we're getting folks on a bridge to a more stable financial lifestyle and not always having to go back and deal with predatory lenders.
You know, Gary, when I covered the state legislature, and this has been a while ago, there were debates even then about regulating payday lenders. And of course, there were people saying that we should just push them out of business, as I think Malia said South Dakota did. Why are they so resilient, and what kind of political influence do they wield to survive?
Right. Let me start that by just saying how spectacular Sarah Exodus Lending is.
The Exodus Lending,
the problem.
Is, yeah.
Right. Cause, I mean, that's the problem. Like, someone who comes in, they're desperate, they need a few hundred dollars for a medical bill, a car, whatever it might be, who pays $45 on that $300. They do it once. That's not really a problem. It's very expensive, but that's not the problem. The problem is being stuck in the trap. The problem is every 2 weeks you're paying the interest and you're not getting out, and so you pay $1,200 in fees for a year on the same $500. And that's what I love about what Exodus is doing. And that actually dovetails with the political piece. I mean, let's remember that payday lending didn't exist in the country until about the mid-1990s. Huh. And the way it insinuated itself, it went state by state, legislator by legislative body by legislative body, seeking an exemption. So they sold these as emergency loans, the kind of examples I start off with, like, well, you need a few hundred dollars, you don't have a rich uncle, you don't have a credit card, where are you going to go? As if these would be once in a blue moon products. So I think state legislators, governors were sympathetic for that, and they created enabling legislation. Most states, virtually every state in the country, has a usury cap, a cap on the annual interest rate. You know, here in New York, where I'm sitting, it's 15%. I don't know for Minnesota, but it's typically 15, 20, maybe 30%. So there had to be an exemption in every state where there was a usury cap to these very expensive loans.
Mm-hmm.
But it took a long while for people to realize, like, wait a second, these aren't emergency loans. These are the kind of things that desperate people are taking out time and time and time and time again. And so a few select states, North Carolina, Ohio, South Dakota, Arizona, I think Oregon, a couple other states, invited them in and then didn't kick them out so much as say, we're taking away our usury cap exemption. In Ohio, they have a usury cap of 28%, and said, okay, no, now you could provide payday loans, but you have to charge no more than an APR of 28% a year. By the way, that passed in, I think, 2008. You know, this new statewide, and it was a statewide ballot initiative. 2/3 of the people said, yes, there should be a 28% cap on the interest rate we provide. It wasn't until last year, almost 10 years later, that they were actually able, the state of Ohio, to enforce that law, because there are all these carve-outs and, you know, legal cases and all that. So, you know, once they're in, they're hard to knock out. There's a dozen states, including New York, that never invited them in. But the states that invited them in, it's always, even if there's, you know, legislation, even if there's a ballot initiative, there's always a prolonged fight.
Yeah, here's what Ohio did. Capped interest rates at 28%, limits monthly fees to $30, also limits repayment on the loans to no more than 6% of the borrower's monthly income. How does that sound to you, Malia?
I mean,
on the
it
right
sounds
track,
awesome.
Or,
yeah. It would be great if we could institute something like that here in Minnesota, but we have to be aware of the political environment that we're in. And even though there have been great efforts, including that of the research work of Isaiah Minnesota and a lot of other leaders in our state trying to remove that and to institute stricter laws, you have people influencing our leaders. One example is Brad Rixman. He's the owner of 26 Pawn Americas and 16 Payday America stores. He's one of the biggest political contributors in Minnesota. He gave more than $540,000 to the Republican Party. And we have to remember that these types of payday lenders are financed by big banks, by Wells Fargo and by U.S. Bank. They provide the credit limits to payday lenders in order for them to borrow those funds out. And so we have to see the pipeline
okay,
of interest
let me,
that's
let me
there.
Understand that, the connection there. Are you saying that they are the financial backers, basically, for that is where the payday lenders can go to some of these big banks to extend the kind of credit that they do?
Yes. ACE and Payday America are two of the largest payday lenders in the state, and they receive their credit lines of credit in order for them to borrow money from big banks like Wells Fargo
that.
And U.S. Bank. These are credit lines that are upwards of $165 million, and those credit agreements extended out into 2015. And so until we get, you know, more updated financials, we can know more. But this has been going on since 2004. So when we talk about something like the Simple Loan, we have to recognize that, you know, this is not this is a pipeline. It's a very intricate pipeline of predatory lending and predatory practices that on the outwards, it looks as though, you know, U.S. Bank is participating in trying to reverse it, but also has its hand in investing in it because it's profitable for them.
Austin says, I was on a payday loan, a vicious cycle. I wasn't able to afford that much money taken out of my next paycheck. They trap you because of the financial issues that came up. Took me a while to get out of that, but I finally did. Matthew says on Twitter, this new U.S. Bank product is just another money-making scheme. If they really wanted to do something for the population of individuals who need these kinds of loans, they would offer a product that allowed them to build their credit and have a bank account. If you've just gotten in on the conversation, wonder what we're talking about. We're discussing U.S. Bank's decision to get into this market of emergency loans at a high interest rate, not as high as the payday lenders, but still a pretty high interest rate. And we're talking about regulation around what is known as predatory lending and reform. Why is it hard to get reforms through state capitals? Ohio has done it. Colorado has done it. A number of other states, not here in Minnesota. And then I'm asking you to join in here. If you've been in one of these cycles, what was your experience? How long did it take you to pull yourself out of it? What could banks or credit unions do to make emergency loans more accessible? And by the way, I hope you heard what we were talking about Exodus Lending, because that is a website and a company that you should know about. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 on Twitter at Carrie NPR, to Donna in Duluth. Hi, Donna.
Hi there.
Hi. What's your knowledge about this?
Well, you know, I have a small business up in Duluth, and I have probably about a half a dozen employees that probably make around $30,000 a year. You know, not a lot. And I have noticed that they have this same problem with needing a few hundred dollars just to cover something. I want to give you an example. That gentleman that you had talked to earlier about, you need a car to drive to work.
Yeah.
And one employee that couldn't afford the insurance on her car, and she got pulled over and she got a ticket. She couldn't pay the ticket. Pretty soon she doesn't have a driver's license. Now she still has to get to work. So I wanted that employee to come to work. So I paid her fines. And I took, you know, $50 a week out of her paycheck. And she was so ever grateful to have that loan, interest-free loan. And so now several times my employees have come to me and asked, you know, I just need a couple hundred dollars. And that's what I do to help them, because I appreciate, you know, how hard it is for them. So I give them the whatever, $200 or whatever they need. And then I just tell them, well, I'm going to take $25 or $50 a month, you know, a week out of your paycheck until this is paid off.
Donna, I think it's really exceptional.
It's a great benefit. And, yeah, you know, as a small business person, I don't have a lot of benefits I can give them, but that's one of them I've discovered that's been very helpful for them.
I think it's pretty unusual that they feel open enough to be able to come to you and tell you about financial difficulties and ask you for help.
Be happy, and I need them to be loyal. And I think that's just something that helps them to appreciate, you know, working for me. And so but it is a problem. I mean, this is a problem with people. They just need a few hundred dollars. And that interest rate that they're charging is just crazy.
Good to have your call. Yeah.
What Donna has done is actually replicating a model that some community banks are using. Sunrise Banks also has a product similar to this, and they work with companies to create, it's a product called, I believe, True Connect, and it allows companies to extend small dollar loans to their employees, and they provide the back-end infrastructure to facilitate that. And Donna, being the responsible business owner and gracious business owner that she is extended that and created a program of her own. And one of the realities is when we talk about cash flow, if we eradicated the two-week payment system that a lot of business owners have to have,
just the cycle of creating
more liquidity, we would eradicate a lot of payday lending itself. So we have to think about the systems that we've created and whether or not they work for us now.
Gary, what's your idea on how employers can be involved in this, solving this?
Right. I guess some of the good news here is that there are companies in Silicon Valley or companies wherever they might be using technology. In fact, there is one. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. That's doing just what Donna's doing, you know, unofficially. They even sell it as, hey, you could provide this great benefit to your employees. That'll help. There's another one that goes around or is built around your utilities. Okay, if you're a little bit behind, we'll have a much more affordable payday product. I think it's at 36% APR. And by doing it via a website, by doing it, a lot of the work going on behind the scenes by machines, you save a lot of the overhead costs. So there are alternatives out there. Same as with the credit unions, there's great alternatives out there. They're just few and far between, or they haven't quite caught on yet. But there are interesting things brewing. The problem is people need the money today.
Exactly.
And
can't wait for right legislation or innovation. But let's talk about that. Let's get a look at the latest news. And our conversation will continue with Gary Rivlin. He's a journalist and he's the author of Broke USA. And Malia Connolly is director of the Association for Black Economic Power. And they are creating a credit union to open by the end of the year. Asking you for your experiences with this and your ideas about putting predatory lending out of business, essentially. 651-227-6000. 800-242-2828 and on Twitter at Carrie NPR. To the phones, to Larry in Bloomington. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Carrie. I was in the Army for a long time. I had a lot of soldiers who worked for me who ended up having to take out payday loans. And without exception, it was because they were financially irresponsible. Now, I realize in the civilian world there's other issues. But my question to these people, your guests, is what is wrong with payday loans? And by the way, on the rhetoric of the subject, when you label something predatory lending, that's not honest debate. So what's wrong with them? And if the interest rates are so high, why aren't there lots of other banks jumping in to try to get this business? And my suggestion to you is because these guys are really, really bad credit risk.
Larry, good question. But I will say I think you can label an interest rate that's 200, 300, 400% as predatory. You don't agree with that.
Why?
Because it's exploiting people that are in a tough spot.
Okay, are someone taking a gun and forcing these people to take these loans? I'm not aware of that. It's a choice made by adults. And again, I think in my experience with military soldiers, they were all financially irresponsible when they ended up needing these loans.
Malia, what would you say?
You know, it's really interesting that we talk about the military because military folks are actually protected by law. The Congress enacted a cap on lending to military folks, and that cap is at 36%. So I think when we talk about responsibility, we also have to talk about access. We have to talk about what financial products and services are actually accessible to people and what advocacy are those communities, you know, receiving. The military is receiving advocacy from the federal federal government capping any lending specifically for them. And so the question that I would ask is, why can't we extend that cap to all American citizens and protect everyone?
Larry, what would you say to that if you're still there?
Military is an unusual situation. Most military people are paid for a similar job, much less than their counterparts. And secondly, they experience a whole bunch of things that your typical civilian doesn't experience, like being gone for 12 months with a wife and children at home. So that's one reason, although I actually think that those protections are unnecessary. I would counsel kids who have this problem to go to the bank and get a loan. They are easy to do because they had a guaranteed income, and get a regular loan from a bank. And that worked, especially in small towns. So my point is that people getting these loans are adults. Why aren't we holding them accountable for the problems they've caused? And I'm well aware some of them have medical emergencies beyond their control and all that. But I will bet you an awful lot of them are simply irresponsible, because that's my experience. Why is it morally wrong for a guy to make money when an adult makes a transaction with him? I don't get it.
I think the conversation is not that banks or credit unions or payday lenders can't make money. We expect that. It's the amount of money that they're making. And Gary, please feel free to step in here.
Right. That was exactly the point I was going to make. Yes. If you have a lower credit rating, you are typically a higher risk. though I would point out lots of wealthy people don't pay back loans. It's not just people of modest means. But, you know, let's go with you know, FICO scores. And it's just how much more? I always use the example of subprime auto loans. Mm. You know, someone with good credit right now, what's it going to be, 4 or 5% annual rate for an auto loan? I wrote this long story a couple of years ago where the typical rate in Ohio was like 20%. For subprime autos. Is that person four times the risk? No, they're desperate. They could get away with it. And if you look at it, subprime credit cards, subprime auto loans, subprime mortgages, which was a big deal 10 years ago today or around now, they're making far more money off the low-income person than they are the middle-income person. That's my problem. Why should you be making two or three times the profit on a single mom with two kids cleaning up hotel rooms as you are on the professional who's making $75,000, $100,000? It's not that – the problem isn't that they're charging more. It's that they're charging exorbitantly more because they know these folks have no other alternatives. The caller's giving an example of like, well, why don't they go to a bank for a loan? Yes, that would be nice. The only reason payday loans exist is because most banks would not offer these small denomination loans. We're talking about U.S. Bank right now because it's so unusual. And look what they're doing. They're offering a loan product of between 70, 80, 90% APR. The problem is exactly what the caller is suggesting, that there isn't this in-between alternative that would help those, whether they're irresponsible or responsible for their money. And on the irresponsibility point, yeah, of course. There are rich people, poor people, and everyone in between who spend their money on stuff they shouldn't spend money on. But I would turn that around and say that the person who's making minimum wage, that's 15 grand a year, someone who's working as a clerk or working in a fast food place making maybe 18, 20 grand a year, there really isn't that much money to misspend irresponsibly. How does anyone get along with kids on $20,000, $30,000 a year? The answer is they don't, and they end up being desperate and looking for any product out there. And the payday lenders are on corners all over their city, and it's easy. You go in, 5 minutes later, you walk out with the cash. Banks wouldn't offer that.
Yeah, I want to talk about marketing here in a minute, but Mike says, I worked in a church and we helped people out. We found we'd do it once, but if it kept coming up, we'd get more involved to figure out why they weren't financially secure. This is something Larry was bringing up. And then Mike adds, but that's hard work. Sometimes lenders are the problem. Sometimes it is financial illiteracy. To Deb in Henderson. Hi, Deb. Would you want to add to this?
Hi. I had a couple of things. One is that in 1980s with President Reagan, there was a lot of deregulation. And one of the things that was deregulated was the usury laws, which has allowed for this exorbitant, I think, stealing from people.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I wanted to ask is, why is it that, you know, credit card rates and return rates are, you know, if you borrow money, can be up to 24%, but then the interest rates that you get with your money in the bank is 0.5%.
Yeah.
I think
that's a whole nother show, Deb, but we hear your point. Thanks for the call. To Jeff in Shoreview. Hi, Jeff. I'm sorry, Gary, go right ahead if you want to.
She brought up something really interesting. She mentioned, you know, President Reagan. In fact, there was plenty of deregulation.
Of the usury laws, right.
But it was actually the U.S. Supreme Court. There's a famous decision that said that where we as credit card holders doesn't matter, it's where the bank, where the credit card company has its headquarters. And there's, I think, three states in the country with no usury cap. One of them is South Dakota. Lo and behold, yeah. You send your Citibank credit cards.
Right.
Where do you send it to? South Dakota. Why? Because they have no usury cap, and Citibank could charge whatever annual percentage rate they want on that. Citibank happens to be in my city, New York City. As I said before, there's a 15% usury cap, but that doesn't make a difference. I might have a Citibank card in my pocket, and my bank is down the street. Doesn't make a difference. They are, by law, in South Dakota. And that's their workaround to charge whatever interest rate they want.
Grant says on Twitter, it's also important to mention it's not only the Republicans who take money from payday lenders. They take by far the most, but like most corporate funders, they fund both sides. Okay, now to Jeff in Shoreview. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning.
Hi.
Just a quick comment, and then I'll tell my whole story. I was stunned at the military guy. I spent 24 years in the regular Army, and the idea of not working with and protecting my soldiers is just abhorrent to me. I would never have done that. We learned how to do food stamps and everything else in my battalion, and my battalion commander, in tears, used to sign the income statements so that the county would not question them. Well, we needed it. Mm-hmm. We take care of our people. Anyway, I worked with a disabled veteran. She was also is a paranoid schizophrenic, so she has all sorts of multiple problems. But she took out a payday loan a few years ago. And the loan company, and this is where interest rates are not the only thing. These people charge service charges. And they were charging $25 every week, sometimes twice a week, through her direct withdrawal.
Wow.
And I finally found a lawsuit against one of the companies out in Nevada, copied it off the Internet, and brought it to her credit union. And we were able to stop the payment, and then we sent all of that to the Attorney General's office here in Minnesota.
So she was paying a high interest, but also these accumulating service fees.
Over 2,000% would have been the payback. Wow. And then these $25 fees. And like I say, it wasn't just once a week. Sometimes it was twice. And it was not ever applied to the balance.
Jeff, I appreciate the call and the story there. I didn't want to miss talking about the marketing because I think Gary or Malia brought this up early in the conversation. Gary, I think it was you that, and as Jeff just said, they're on every corner. They know their audience, right? How would you describe the marketing that the payday lenders are doing?
Aggressive. So, I mean, there's a few things. I mean, a couple of the, I mean, let's keep something in mind that they may look from appearances like this rundown corner shop, but we're talking about some huge chains here with 1,000, 2,000 stores across the country. And so they're bringing in hundreds of millions of dollars a year. And so they have the money for advertising. Some advertise on the radio, but for the most part, it's almost like the dentist, like reminder. You haven't been in a couple of months, so they send you a reminder. So these are emergency loans. People are supposed to show up only if it's an emergency.
Yeah.
But they'll say like, hey, I've seen these flyers. You haven't been in 2 or 3 months. Gladys, like, you know, thinking of a vacation, want to, you know, it's like, really? You're trying to induce people to, I mean, they're emergency loans. They're expensive. Mm. No one should ever take these. But if you have to, like, let's not try to, like, create demand. There's another thing they do. Refer a friend, refer a coworker, and you know you get a free loan. And again, you're enlisting people. Like, okay, maybe not. We need emergency products like this, but let's not induce people to sort of sell these as if there's some kind of good here. There's you know, like the airlines have their frequent flyer programs. There's frequent user programs to get people to come back more and more and more and more. Check cashers use it as well as others, as well as payday lenders. But, you know, to me, their best marketing is a big sign on a popular corner and people right. know all they have to do is stop in and 5 minutes later they got cash in their pocket.
I mean, I think there's a reason, Gary, you put in the title of the book, Broke USA from Pawn Shops to Poverty, Inc., the pawn shop, I mean, often you will see payday lenders either right next door or on the same block of as the pawn shops. Why?
Around the corner from the Rent-A-Center place next to the rapid tax refund. You know, it's because the companies, whether it's a payday lender, a check casher, a pawnbroker, rent-to-own, they all do the same thing. They look for zip codes where the average income is under a certain amount, under $30,000 a year, mm-hmm. typically, and they open storefronts there because they know that that's the best advertising. They're just on the corner for people to take out these really expensive products. It's almost like a geography of poverty. Just like we could go to a neighborhood and, you know, there's the Starbucks next to, you know, this chain, Pottery Barn, whatever. You know, you go to, I could just tell after a while just doing research for the book. You know, I could just tell what neighborhood I was in just by, you know, the storefronts. Because always, if there's a pawnbroker here, I knew within a block I would see an accumulation of the others. The full title, by the way, is Broke USA, From Pawnbrokers to Poverty, Inc., How the Working Poor Became Big Business. Ah. That, to me, is what is incredible here, that when I started this was back in 2008, I really thought these were just, you know, mom-and-pa little stores, run-down stores. I was shocked. In 2000, it's changed some because there's been mergers and purchasing and all, you know, acquisitions and stuff. But it's there were 6 publicly traded check cashing companies and 7 publicly traded payday lenders. This is really, really big business. Walmart's getting into it. Lots of big businesses. And, you know, kind of circling back to something we were talking about before, you know, they're spending millions of dollars on lobbyists. You know, individual corporations, ACE, Advance America, the big ones have, you know, their own lobbyists. Their trade associations have lobbyists. So we're really talking, and they have lobbyists in state legislatures around, or state capitals around the country, because there is pushback to get rid of these.
I mean, this is what Malia and I were talking about earlier. I mean, there is a reason that these reforms are somewhat few and far. They're the exception, right, Malia, rather than the rule.
They are, unfortunately, because of this influence of, you know, campaign money. And also, as Geary mentioned, the larger conglomerate of, you know, this is big business. This isn't just a mom and pop one off. I mean, when you talk about the area of the north side of Minneapolis and the community that we're serving with the Association for Black Economic Power, U.S. Bank is the only bank in that entire area. And now, aside from our New Day loan and our alternative to payday lending, community members there have no other alternative other than the unbanked predatory lender or this 71 to 90% simple loan that U.S. Bank is offering. So there aren't any equitable, accessible loans for this community where they can go up the road and get access to. They're completely surrounded by financial predators.
We have a caller here who wants to bring Walmart in. Dominic, is that what you're asking about, Walmart?
Well, I had heard Walmart went to a payroll service that allows their employees that after they've worked the first week of the pay period, that they can actually get a half a check for like a $10 fee. And I thought that was just brilliant, or, you know, good for them.
So, Geary, do you know anything about that?
Right. He's saying it accurately. It's kind of a version of what Donna was talking about with a $10 fee. But, you know, Walmart got into check cashing about a decade ago.
Yeah.
And you know, people are like, oh, Walmart, you know, they're being predatory. I thought it was great. They were charging far less than the corner check casher charges. And I mean, I knew what's in it for them. They love the idea of people with a lot of cash in the pockets of their stores. But that aside, it was like they were adding competitive pressure, which was, you know, making check cashers offer a more competitive rate. So I love that Walmart got in. You know, you could be angry with them or not at the $10 fee, but that's a pretty nominal fee, and it's a lot less than going to a payday lender.
Are there other – what I was curious about is whether there are other big companies and they're driving consolidation. Do either – I mean, are – if you look at who owns the payday lenders, would you find, Geary, I don't know, 2 or 3 large companies –
Yeah, there's around. I'm a few years old on this, but there were about 5 or 6 huge chains, and they account for the vast majority, 75-80% of the loan volume. The only difference nowadays is online payday lending. Online payday lending is as bad as bricks and mortar stores are for payday lending, where the average rate could be APR equivalent of 400%. You're typically seeing 800%. online, and a caller before was talking about all those fees, the $25 to, you know, to pay them. I mean, literally, there are online payday lenders that every time you pay them the money you owe them, they'll charge a fee for paying them. And so, and you know, there's they have access to your account. They make your life miserable. There've been a few attorneys general around the country that have fought back. But you know, there's a lot of things to fight back against. So this hasn't exactly been a priority for most AGs around the country. And, you know, online payday lending, which is growing bigger and bigger and bigger, I think it was last time I checked, $12 or $15 billion a year out of a $40, $50 billion industry. It's far worse than the bricks and mortar world.
Gary, thanks. Really good to have you on the show. Appreciate the insight there. Malia, good luck with the opening of the credit union.
Thanks
by
so
the
much.
End of the year, right?
Absolutely.
Good to have you in the studio.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Carrie at @KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.